Welcome to another segment of Real Estate Education for Everyone. This is Ed McNamara of Bean & Dunn Real Estate in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. This segment is titled Buyer's Responsibilities. Today I'm going to cover resources available to find those great deals, how a realtor can represent you, things to consider when selecting an area to live in, and getting ready to make an offer once you have found a property. Some of the resources available are kind of obvious. Local newspapers, typically on the weekends, have a section that has all the latest listings. Local newspapers tend to be very current because ads are placed on a weekly basis versus real estate guides, which those ads are typically placed every 2 weeks or so. So the guides that you get in the grocery stores are probably a little bit more outdated than your local newspapers. Other resources available are for sale by owners. Those are a little bit harder to find because typically the for sale by owners don't advertise as often as real estate companies do. You may see some scatter ads, as we call them, in the Sunday paper, some open houses by for sale by owners. Other sources to look for homes are the HUD site, the www.hud.gov. The Department of Veterans Affairs have homes for sales. Both the HUD and the VA homes now are managed by private companies. It used to be First Preston. They just changed to Bid Select. Manages all the FHA HUD repo properties, and I'll talk a little bit more about those later. But those are all private companies now. They're not handled through HUD or handled through the VA. Estate auctions are another source. Typically, you can find those in the newspaper. You can contact attorneys' offices. They may have some information on estate auctions. To me, the school's still out on whether or not those are really good deals. Mostly, the family members don't really know how much the property's worth. They tend to overprice them because they want all the money out of it that they can get. On occasion, you'll find someone that doesn't have a clue, and they might be well under the value, especially if it's an out-of-state person. The home is in Oklahoma. The person lives in California, where the real estate prices are way out of line, or the person might be from Mississippi, where the real estate is much lower than it is in Oklahoma. So it really kind of depends, but that's kind of a hit-or-miss deal on the auctions. Nonprofit agencies and foundations. Habitat for Humanity is an agency that low-income families can work through to have a home built. Nonprofit agencies also, for instance, here in Oklahoma City, they are 7 community housing development organizations, are also called CHODOs, that get grant money from the local government to build houses in blighted areas. In fact, I worked at a CHODO for about 2 years on a contract while I was still a realtor. But I helped them put together their first-time homebuyer education program, and I helped them build about 9 new houses. Those houses cost, the first ones that we did cost about $80,000 to $85,000 to build, and we sold them at $50,000 and $55,000. So they took quite a loss, but in the end, when we got a little bit better at it, we were pretty much selling them at cost. So we were selling a 3-bed, 2-bath house without a garage for $65,000. Still about $20,000 below what the normal market would have brought had they been in a better area and not low-income housing. But if you're in a low-income situation, what you really need to check with your local agency, local community action agency, to figure out what the income levels are for low-income families, you might be able to find a pretty good deal through some nonprofit agencies in getting either an existing house or a new house built. The obvious source these days is the internet. We see numbers 70% of homebuyers, 80% of homebuyers now find the home that they're looking for on the internet. It's still required, once you find the home on the internet, typically you're not going to the address is not included. Realtor.com does not provide the address. Our own local MLS system doesn't provide the address. So at some point, you're going to have to contact a real estate company to get the address. Most people prefer to drive by, check out the neighborhood, and then make an appointment to see the interior. If it's in a price range that you're real comfortable with and you've been looking around for a while, you might see about contacting a real estate company, getting an appointment to see the interior at the same time that you you drive by, if you're already familiar with that neighborhood. But obviously the internet has got multiple sources for finding homes for sale. The local newspapers will supply a limited amount of info. Most of the newspaper ads are only 3 to 5 lines. That doesn't give you a lot of room to put in a very good description of a house that's for sale. They are really good for finding open houses. Most real estate companies are going to publish either on Friday and Saturday what they're going to be doing on Sunday, so that you can go through, find out when all the open houses are, kind of map out which open houses you can go to. Usually only have about a 3-hour time frame. Open houses being from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Sundays is mostly when they hold their open houses. The other source to finding open houses is an openhouseok.com for Oklahoma. They probably have similar websites where the website is dedicated strictly to publishing when open houses are going to be. Our MLS system also enables you to post when your open house is going to be, so you can go into the MLS system and there's an entry to click on open houses. And I like that system better because it gives you can go in and search and see what the house is about as well before you actually go and take a look at it. So you'll have much more information before you even get to that property. Real estate guides are better than the newspaper, but still somewhat limited. Usually only have one photo and then a brief description of what the property is about. I already mentioned the HUD.gov sites. The purchasing a HUD home is a bid process. Number one, you have to be pre-qualified by a lender. You must put up $1,000 earnest money if the price of the home is over $50,000, which 99% of them these days are over $50,000, and HUD has not updated that requirement. So expect to put up $1,000 earnest money, a cashier's check made out to HUD, and that bid must be made through a licensed real estate company that's HUD certified. For instance, my real estate company is HUD certified. If you wanted to buy a HUD home, we have a special key to get into the house. You can go in and preview the home and then decide how much you want to bid on that property. HUD advertises that there is no minimum bid, and that's true. You can put in any bid that you want. Statistically, you're not going to get that bid if you're what we used to see as 92% below what HUD's asking for that property. So if it's on the market at $100,000, more than likely you're not going to get that bid if you're below netting HUD $92,000 on that property. So netting means after real estate commissions, after any costs that you've asked HUD to pay on your behalf, they're wanting to net somewhere around 92% is typically the history. And they do publish a history of what the bids are. So HUD properties aren't as lucrative as they once were. Now that the private companies have taken them over, real estate companies are handling them, and they're going in and coming up with a pretty good value of what that house is really worth based on what else has sold in that area, the condition of the property, and so on and so forth. So you should be able to get pretty good deals in Oklahoma anyway. There's not that many good HUD repo deals. Here's what I used to tell people. A HUD home went back to HUD for one of two reasons. It was either financial or mechanical. Financial is the person lost their job or for whatever reason couldn't continue to make their mortgage payments, fell too far behind, they foreclosed on it, went to the sheriff's sale, and the home went back to the HUD site and it's for sale again. The other thing is why I tell people it could have been a mechanical problem where there was something seriously wrong with the home and the seller decided that he or she wasn't going to continue to pay for this house and not be able to live in it. That particular problem is not disclosed when you buy a HUD home. In fact, there is no disclosure. It's a disclaimer. It's exempt from disclosure by the government, which is not a good deal. So you really have to kind of know what you're doing when you buy a HUD home. Make sure that you're dealing with a real estate company or a particular realtor that's knowledgeable in homes, that you can go in with that person and see that the home is in pretty good condition. But in 100% of the cases, you always want to get a home inspection. And home inspection, I've got a full segment on that, and there's some excellent resources to find out key things to look for when you go into a home. I'll give you a good example. Here in Oklahoma, the homes are built on a slab. The soil around here is very volatile. So the first thing I do when I pull up into a house is to look around the garage door, because that's the weakest point in the foundation. So if there's a lot of separation between the framing in the garage door, there's probably some pretty good settlement. So that's an indication I probably want to bring in a structural engineer to see if it's just a framing issue where the home was framed and it settled a little bit, or is it a settlement issue with the foundation. And really only an engineer, somebody that's really talented in that area, should be able to make that decision. VA Homes, basically the same thing as HUD Homes. It's a private company now managed by Ocwen Financial. All their homes are listed through a real estate company. In fact, again, Bean & Dunn Real Estate is an Ocwen-approved vendor. We can list and sell VA homes, but there are several companies. Unlike HUD homes, typically here in Oklahoma City, almost all the HUD homes are with one company. The VA homes are spread out, and several companies may have a VA home listed. You can go on to the VA site at www.va.gov and see a list of homes that are available to make offers on. You would contact the real estate company, and it does not have to be the listing company, and I'll get into representation here in a minute, but I always tell people they're better off with their own real estate company rather than the listing company. But they are listed, the VA homes are listed with individual real estate companies. There are also bank repos that you can look at, and those are a result of the sheriff's sale. And the sheriff's sale is another avenue that you can go to. Here, they're every third Thursday, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. All the homes that have gone into foreclosure are offered for sale by the sheriff. Sheriff's not even there, but it's just a formality. You go to the courthouse, and it's a bid process. It's an auction, and you're bidding against other people. Here, I've gone to several sheriff sales, never even came close to buying a property. We went in with some set numbers that was no kidding. The absolute maximum that we could bid on that house, do any little bit of work to it, and turn around and sell it, and come out okay on it. And, I mean, we were blown out of the water. So, just there's a lot of inexperienced people at sheriff sale overbidding on properties. If you're going to live in that house for a long time and you don't mind paying full price for it, that's fine. But to me, you're better off not buying a repo that you have no idea what's wrong with it, and go buy a normal house that's listed through sale that has full disclosures. I don't know why people tend to pay so much at the sheriff sale, other than the fact that they're at an auction and get caught up in the moment of making a bid, and don't go in there with a preset number that they're going to bid on that house. I had talked to a person that was going into foreclosure, was considering buying that house myself, and I offered him $47,000 for that house based on it needing about $8,000 worth of work, which would have pretty much put it back at market. And that, so the house was really only worth around $55,000. And at the sheriff's sale, someone bid $55,000. And I'm sitting there scratching my head. Now, wait a minute, this person, no kidding, has to put at least $5,000 in this property, even if they're going to live in it. They have to put $5,000 into this property, and they bid $55,000, so they're already $5,000 upside down in this house. They could have bought that house on the market for $50,000 easy. There's other houses in that neighborhood for $50,000. So if you're going to go to a sheriff's sale or any kind of auction looking for properties, number one, make sure you do your homework, know exactly what that house is worth, and try to come up with some reasonable estimates of what work that house might need, and then subtract that from your maximum bid. So if the house is going to go for $100,000, it needs $10,000 worth of work, the maximum you should bid is $90,000. Make sure you get that stuff straight before you go. Covers resources and being able to find homes that are for sale. The other obvious resource is a real estate company. I get into our MLS system every day. I look at new houses that come on the market. I've got buyers that call me looking in particular areas. I've got a list of people that are looking for a house on Northwest 37th Street, for instance, and when something comes up, I give them a call, say, listen, this listing just came out today, you might want to go take a look at it. They drive by, if they like the outside, like the neighborhood, they call me, we go in and we take a look at it, and then they decide whether or not they want to make an offer on it. In that capacity, I'm serving as a single-party broker. In other words, I represent only them. I have nothing to do with the seller because it's not my listing. If it was my listing, then the only thing I could do is act as a transaction broker, where I don't represent the seller, I don't represent the buyer. I work strictly to get the transaction done. I don't particularly like working in a transaction broker situation, especially when I'm working with someone that's new to the real estate market, whether it be the seller who's never sold a home before, they bought a home, but they've never sold a home before, or a buyer who's never bought a home before, or who has bought a home and it's been a long time, they're selling a home, but they really haven't been in the market for a long time. Transaction broker really does not allow a realtor to represent anyone. So the buyer's got to make their own decisions. They've got to set their own timelines. They've got to come up with their own number of what they're going to offer on that property. They've got to come up with the terms that they want in the contract. And if you're a first-time home buyer, that's too much. You can't do that. So you need a realtor that can represent you in a single-party broker manner. Now, I'm talking about Oklahoma. In other states, that's called a buyer's broker, and a transaction broker will be referred to as a dual party or a dual agency. Dual agency where you don't represent either side. You're working for both the buyer and the seller. And it's really not the best situation to be in as a realtor or as a first-time home buyer. So if you're looking at houses and you need a realtor to represent only you, do not call the listing company. Do not call the company that has that home for sale. Because if you go and work with a realtor, for Remax Associates, for instance, has the listing, and you call a Remax Associate realtor, you have to work in a dual agent or transaction broker method. So the best thing to do, if it's listed by Remax Associates, is to call another company that doesn't have that house listed. That realtor can work for you as a single-party broker. They can help you find comparable sales. They can help you determine the price that you want to offer. They can help you determine financing options. They can help you determine what to ask the seller for. They can work strictly for you, and that's the best method to be in. As a transaction broker, you still have responsibilities to make sure things are done correctly, but you really cannot give recommendations to the buyer or give recommendations to the seller. So if you're not an experienced buyer, don't use the company that has the house listed. The other thing that you can do, let's say that you're not using a real estate company, that you found a house that was for sale by owner. And if this person doesn't really know a lot about real estate either, number one, in Oklahoma, the seller for sale by owner is not required to do any disclosures. They don't have to tell you anything that they know that might be a defect in the house. They should ethically, but they're not required. So the best thing to do is, number one, before you sign the contract, is to contact an attorney's office and have them review that contract. Make sure that you are fully protected. It's going to cost you $150 to $200 for an attorney to do that, but it's money well spent. If anyone is going to review the contract for you and give you advice on that contract, they must either be licensed, like a real estate company license, or they've got to be an attorney. Your neighbor or someone that bought a house last month really cannot legally give you advice on a contract. So just be careful on that and make sure that you do your homework. I could sit here and give you a ton of nightmare stories of people that have tried to buy houses from renters that were supposedly for sale by owners, but there's a lot of good deals out there, and I'm not going to sit here as a licensed realtor and try to convey the idea that I don't think anybody's competent enough to buy a house. That's not true. It's just, if you've never done it before, I really think you should have a realtor to represent you. It doesn't cost you anything. You don't pay a realtor for representation as a buyer. There are several things to consider when selecting a realtor. Number one, experience. I was a brand new realtor at one point. When I first got my license, I was a new realtor, but I had a solid background. I did mortgages for 6 years, so I had a lot of interaction with real estate companies. I knew values because of the loan application, because of the appraisal, so I had a little bit of an advantage over a brand new realtor who may just have been out of college, didn't have any exposure to real estate at all. The other thing that I did as a brand new realtor is I partnered up with an experienced realtor, someone that had 10 years experience, so that I had someone that I could work with closely when I had a buyer to ask questions. Hey, they asked me this, or what about this in the contract, and what forms am I supposed to have? What should I look for? So I had someone to back me up at all times. Most new realtors do have that, and it's called their broker or their trainer or someone that they've been assigned to help them through the first few transactions. So don't let the fact that someone's brand new prevent you from working with that person. If you get along with that person and you like what you hear and you trust them, then by all means, work with them. Don't be afraid to ask. If they don't have a lot of experience, do they have someone helping them prepare this contract and someone else that can answer some questions? One of the things short of asking someone how long they've been in real estate is to ask them what designations they have. Or even the easiest thing to do is look at their business card, because most realtors will put their designations on a business card. If you don't understand what they are, just ask them. You're going to see things like ABR, Accredited Buyer's Representative, GRI, Graduate of the Real Estate Institute, CRS, Certified Residential Specialist, CRB, Certified Residential Broker, and there's some newer designations that have to do with the internet. But basically, the more designations, the more time that person has taken to take postgraduate classes. I, for instance, have a Graduate of Real Estate Institute and a Certified Residential Specialist designation. That was a lot of work. They're not easy classes, and it takes time to get those designations. For the CRS, you have to have a minimum number of sales and a minimum time as a realtor to get that designation. You can tell right away whether or not someone knows what they're talking about, no matter what it is. And in real estate, if your realtor is saying some oddball stuff or trying to make these hokey deals, you might want to steer clear. Go on to the next person. You can tell right away whether or not someone's knowledgeable. So don't be afraid to ask some questions to see if that person knows about real estate, knows what's going on in the community. Are they proficient in the area that you want to live in? If they go into the area and can't find their way around, that's the first clue. Of course, these days with GPS, that's easy to get away with. Personality, in my opinion, is a big factor. If you don't like the person, you're probably better off finding another realtor that you're going to feel more comfortable with. And that leads me to the next one, which is trust. If you don't like the person, you probably don't trust them. You've got to trust the person that you're working with, because they're going to help you structure a deal that you're going to have to live with once it's accepted. Agency, I already talked about. That is whether or not they're going to represent you personally, or they're going to try to represent both sides. The other thing is, are they professional? And I don't necessarily mean do they drive a fancy car and do they wear $500 suits, but do they act professional? Are they well-mannered? Do they say appropriate things or inappropriate things? I had gone to talk to a seller that had a home for sale that didn't sell. The listing had expired, and I went in and I was talking to them, and they asked me if I knew the realtor that had that listing prior to that going expired. And they gave me the name, and I knew that person. And they kind of shook their head and said, "Would you believe that this guy brought my daughter an application to work at Hooters?" Now, that's inappropriate. And there are some realtors out there that say inappropriate things. And so that's not professional. And that's probably not a person that you want to work with. So just move on. Be professional yourself and tell that realtor, "I'm sorry, but I don't think I'm getting the representation I need, and we're going to find someone that's more suitable to our needs." Not a problem. When I first started out, I was working with a doctor, and I was a little out of my league in the price range that he was shopping in. I was not familiar with million-dollar homes and some of the amenities that come in million-dollar homes, and they could sense that right away. He was very professional, very polite, and said, "Ed, you know, you're a great guy, but we need someone that, with a little bit more knowledgeable in the area that that we're shopping in." And I said, "Yeah, you're right, and I appreciate you being upfront with me and not returning my calls." Some of the things that you could look at when you consider the area that you want to live in is, number one, is there adequate fire protection? Is there adequate police protection? You can get crime statistics online very easily now for areas. Are there hospitals in the area that you want to live in? How close is the closest hospital? What about shopping? Shopping might be important to you, where the malls are. Other areas of importance might be the schools. If you have young children, what schools are going to attend, what the tax rate is, the millage for the area. I know I live in Cleveland County, which is one of the most expensive counties in Oklahoma, so my taxes are higher than the people that live across the street because they're in Oklahoma County. So that's something to consider. What community amenities are available? Are there parks? I have a real nice park with a YMCA about a 5-minute walk from my house. Although that wasn't here when I first moved in, it's certainly going to be a selling point when I go to put my house in the market. Probably one of the best parks in Oklahoma City. One of the other things that you should get from your real estate company is a buyer's packet with all this information I just discussed. A good realtor will probably give you some names of home inspectors that you might consider calling and interviewing, termite companies, mortgage companies, insurance companies, if you don't already have that information. They're going to give you a packet with a complete list of homes that meet your criteria. They should give you samples of contracts that you're going to be signing in the future when you do get prepared to make an offer. And I highly encourage you to take those forms home and read them, know what's in them, so that when it comes time to make an offer, you're more at ease and better understand what that realtor is telling you at the time that you're writing your offer, so it's not all brand new. The other thing is, if you go from working with a real estate company and end up finding a FSBO, you're going to be a little bit more familiar with the contracts as well. And again, you should be signing some type of agency agreement so that you know what capacity your realtor is working for you. Are they a transaction broker or a dual agent, or are they a single party broker, just a buyer's broker? So make sure you understand exactly what capacity your realtor is working in. Also, discuss with your realtor whether or not you're going to be looking at some point in the future the listings of that company. The minute that you go look at a listing from that company, they become a dual agent or a transaction broker. And if you're not comfortable with that, you need to tell them that up front. Once you've gone through and you've looked at all these houses and you've narrowed down your choices, the area is good, the amenities work out for you, you've got your money sources are all lined up, your realtor has given you an estimate, the mortgage company has given you an estimate, you're comfortable with what you have to bring to the table, you've reviewed the contract and you know what's in there, you're okay with what is being submitted to the seller, then it's time to make your offer. You would go in. It takes me about an hour and a half to prepare these contracts and completely explain everything to the buyers, make sure that everybody understands what the timelines are, when inspections have to be done, how much money you're going to need, what's required of you as a buyer to make sure that everything gets done in a timely manner. Contracts are time sensitive. They have dates and times in them. So you have to perform as a buyer in a set period of time. Once everything is done and the contract is accepted, you go through the mortgage company, your loan's all set, you're going to set up a closing time, a specific date and time where you're going to go in and sign the papers. In Oklahoma, at the time of closing, you get keys to the property as long as your loan is funded. But prior to going to closing, you want to do a final walk through the property because it may have been about 20 days since you've been in that home. Now the sellers have taken all their things out and there's much more area in that house that are exposed. All the carpet underneath the furniture and the walls behind the furniture are now exposed. So you want to go back through that house to make sure that there isn't some damage that you didn't see when the house was full of furniture. The other thing you want to do is make sure that all the contractual repairs were complete to your satisfaction. When you go in and you make an offer on a home in Oklahoma, you pre-negotiate a dollar amount that the seller is willing to spend to fix things that are wrong with the house. So if you go in and you did a full home inspection and the inspector found about $1,000 worth of stuff and you had pre-negotiated $1,250, then you're fine. The seller's obligated to fix that $1,000 worth of things as long as they're contractual. Cosmetic stuff is not contractual. The color of the paint on the wall is not contractual. That's cosmetic. So make sure that your realtor helps you understand repairs that are contractual and repairs that might not be contractual. If you're getting down payment assistance, make sure all those things are all taken care of and that all bond paperwork or down payment assistance paperwork is submitted at least 5 days prior to closing, because it's going to take a government agency a little bit longer to get their paperwork done than it would, say, for a non-government agency that has a lot more staff. So make sure everything is signed. They're going to want original signatures and everything is in place. If for some reason you have to extend, let's say your closing date was set for March 22nd, 2007, it's now March 20th, and you know for a fact that there's no way it's going to close in 2 days, you need to make sure that your realtor has got an extension signed before the 22nd shows up, because after that, legally, the seller is not required to sell to you. So make sure you stay in contract at all times. So, and that's your responsibility as well, as well as the realtor. The realtor should be coming to you and say, listen, we need to do this contract because the contract's going to expire and I don't want us to fall out of contract. The other thing that you have to make sure is that you talk to the mortgage company just prior to closing. Make sure that they have everything that they need. If your loan is still in underwriting, don't be surprised if the mortgage company asks you for some updated information. It's very common. They may want a new bank statement. They may want a new pay stub. Nothing to be alarmed about. It's just that the mortgage company wants the absolute latest information before you go to close. It's an easy process. If you're a person that likes to read everything before you sign things, you may need to make some additional time available to go in and pre-read. A lot of time to go in and do closings, about 30 to 45 minutes. There's a stack of paperwork that if you read everything, you'd be there for 2 or 3 hours. If you're getting a conforming loan through Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, VA, or FHA, it's not so critical. If you're getting a non-conforming loan, you need to make sure that you understand what kind of interest rate you're getting, what are the loan terms on that mortgage. There's a lot of people that have gotten burned where they thought they were getting a fixed rate and end up with a variable rate. So don't just go in there and sign stuff without being familiar with it. So do take some time to go in and read that if you're not at all familiar, or there's a little bit of a not so much of a trust factor with some of the people that you're working with. That concludes this section of buyer's responsibilities. Next section is going to be talking about the purchase contract. Again, if you have any questions on anything that we've covered in this segment or previous segments, please email me at McNamara, that's McNamara, at OKCRealtors.com. I would appreciate it if anyone would take a minute to give me some comments on either iTunes or Podomatic. It really comes in handy when I put these segments together to make sure I address everyone's needs. Thanks. See you on the next one.